You mean you'd give me some... Are we recording right now?
So that's... That would be Captain Kirk, and then Mudhouse would be...
Oh, I like Mudhouse.
Yeah, it was Mudhouse. Yeah, Mudhouse.
All right, Mudhouse it is.
Oh, I like that, whatever you're playing there.
I didn't even know I was playing it.
This will be our 61st podcast. One of us or our guest has cried on every
on
one
every
of them.
Well, most of them. Don't say everyone.
Well, I'm not crying.
He's not crying.
No.
Hi, I'm Chick McGee, and we're off the air.
Well, it's 4 a.m. in the back of the Beamer. Mama, what's up? I know that you're a schemer, but you can't be frontin' when it comes to this. Put down your bag of tricks and give me a kiss. I got a castle in Paris, got a crib in the city. I said I'll get you something nice, got you something pretty, you did, yeah. You liked it like that, big beat so fat, babe. But now we're up in the mud house, over in the club, y'all. Get crunk, bling, bling, got love for your ass. And I'm moving so fast and I can't think. Big butts bouncing up on the sink. Wish you was here, but I can't be sure. The night's all black and everything's a blur. Got my jacket on, smoking, looking like juice. Got a hoodie on my table and my shit's all loose. We sing. Ain't got no dough, all got's my 40. Hey, hey. Ain't got nobody, baby, I can call my shorty.
Woo! Oh, welcome to the Off the Air podcast. Thank you for downloading it. Hi, Jess.
Hello.
Hello, Jason.
I had this urge to want to fade him out because this is how we do it.
And as you can tell,
there's no one going to do it.
We've achieved pretty much everything with the podcast. We're halfway done as far as getting our guests today. It's Bob Schneider. Hi, Bob.
Hi, nice to be here.
Next, and we'll be complete if we can get Clooney on. it'll be perfect. Maybe Clooney and Toni Collette.
You want Toni Collette?
Toni Collette.
That's
I think
new.
She'd be really
That's
interesting.
That's new on the list.
Is that new?
You're talking about Pat Clooney, right?
No, Jor. I just call him Clune or Cloonies, that's the what. Okay, I'm going to start this right away by saying the last podcast I had someone on that I really was like a fan of, not that I'm not a fan of everybody on the podcast,
sure,
but it was Jeff Garlin.
Oh, nice.
And he pretty much beat the shit out of me for about an hour and a half about
well, he probably hates himself.
Yeah, a little bit.
That's the problem. Like, I don't have a very high opinion of myself. So when somebody starts, like, laying it on, it always feels weird. I'm like, what is this? What's wrong with this guy?
Really likes my music? Yeah. There must be something.
Well, it's just, I just have such a poor opinion of myself that it's hard to.
Oh, Bob, we are going to get along so well.
Yeah, it's lots of stuff happens when you start getting compliments and you feel badly about yourself because you want to hear those things.
Sure.
I mean, I love hearing compliments about what I do, but then all of a sudden, I'm like, who does he think I am? You know, how can I be that person? How can I like be this sort of thing that they like?
Right.
Because I really do want to be liked and loved.
Yeah. I get that on a little itty bitty scale because there'll be people come up and are very nice. And I've been on the radio here in Indianapolis for 30 years and we grew up with you. We love you. We love everything. And I'm immediately uncomfortable. And I try to give them the best sincere, thank you very much.
Oh, right.
But sometimes it's not enough.
Sure.
And they'll go, what's wrong?
Oh, yeah.
Are you out? Are you down? What's the problem? You
I think it's easier to hear a compliment like, hey, I heard someone say this about you. If I'm like face to face and looking you in the eye and being like, I really love your music, then I feel uncomfortable for you. Like, I don't, I'm uncomfortable in the situation. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, most of the time, a thank you will suffice.
Right.
But then you do
But
get,
then they go the extra mile.
Well, I
yeah.
think you get the kind of the crazy people. And those people really think that they have some sort of real relationship with you because there's something missing there.
In there.
And
in
then
them,
they're
right.
like, hey, wait a minute. Why is he not, you know, why is he not being the person that I,
that
you
I
know,
built
when
him
you're
up
an
to
entertain-
be? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, just when you're on, like when I'm on stage, I'm a different person on stage because I'm up there to be entertaining and I'll say a bunch of stuff that I find entertaining.
Who
and
wants to get drunk with me?
Right. And then people will think, well, he's this wild and crazy guy. Mm-hmm. And I'm not really, I'm pretty laid back and not, don't get riled up very, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so people are like, who's this guy?
Well, that's like, what? Who, the Bengals? What did she say?
Oh, Susanna Hoffs. This is so weird, Bob. And I know I haven't told you this, but this has really stuck with me. And I saw a documentary or some sort of VH1 Behind the Music or whatever about the Bengals. And Susanna Hoffs said, there is nothing more unsettling for a human being than someone, another human being, to come up to them with total recognition on their face. And Susanna, I just totally love you. And then start a couple, two or three facts. And you, looking at them, have never seen this person before in your life.
Yeah.
And that is the most unsettling thing that one human being can go through.
Well, here's the problem with me. Like, I'm getting old, and so my memory is going. And I just have people come up to me all the time now, and they're just like, hey, Bob, what's up? And I'm like, do I know this person?
They're just friendly.
They just act like they know me, well, and like I should know them. And I just assume that I don't know them, and right. I just go, hey what's up?
Well, right. In the Rath, when you play the Rathskeller here in Indianapolis on Wednesday night, I just happened to be there. Well, that's not true.
But I knew who you were.
No. So, but it was because even as because you were walking toward me down a hallway and I was at the bar, naturally, and I said, oh, hey, Bob, what's up? And I thought in my head, oh, God, I just really said that way too loud. I thought it just, but we say, yeah, hey, chick, how you doing? And I've told you, I don't know if I've told you this personally, but I tell this on the air.
Oh.
There are two people, Joe Theismann, I'd never met before in my life, and I'm obviously a Redskins fan. There are a lot of Redskins trinkets around here. And I was in Orlando one year, and they had the NFL Quarterback Challenge or whatever. And Theismann happened to be sitting on a bench in front of the same hotel I was. I'd never met him before in my life, but I talked a lot on the Bob and Tom show about how much of a Redskins fan I was. So I get off this bus, start walking toward the lobby. Out of the corner of my eye, I see, there's Theismann. Should I say something? And just as I'm thinking that, he goes, hey, chick, how you doing, man? And I went, oh, no way. He had heard on the show, and we talked, and he goes, yeah, I'm on airplanes. I bet once a week someone comes up and says, the biggest Redskins fan is Chick McGee on the Bob and Tom show and all this. But that's the same thing. I can't ever get over you. Like, we'll email back and forth every now and then. And
sure.
I'm so excited, like Christmas, I got an email from Bob, and I'll tell everybody. I mean, I know, but I feel you being uncomfortable right now because I'm doing this. But it's really a treat, and I enjoy your music, and I'm glad that you're such a regular, normal guy.
Thanks. I mean, I know I appreciate that more than I can even express. But it is.
It's uncomfortable. I know it's uncomfortable. It's just, yeah.
Yeah, it's weird because, like, I want to talk you out of it. Like, that's part of my brain is like, sure. No, you don't understand who you're dealing with here.
Yeah, right.
So
I'm capable of awful things.
And I don't mean to, like, put you on the psych chair here, but what is it? Is there an insecurity there that you don't want to live up to? What is that?
I really just have this this idea that I'm just not... just valueless as a human being, and the only thing that makes me like it's okay for me to breathe air is that the fact that I make music and that I mm-hmm. make art or whatever, mm-hmm. and because I do that, then I'm okay to, like, I can keep breathing air. But right. Without that, I'm absolutely
well. Well, I think Nietzsche said that. God, I can't believe I just said. You know, Nietzsche said. No, but it's true. He said the best writers will be those who think I can't be a writer.
Exactly. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I always think that every time I write a song, I always think I'll never write another good song again because I don't know how to do it. I don't, and I try not to think about it. Actually, I just do it and try to avoid thinking about the actual process.
Well, how I got to be such a fan of Bob is that, of course, we're all familiar with Lonely Land,
mm-hmm.
The album that had Metal and Steel and Tokyo and Oklahoma. And what is it, the Texas mix that has King of the World on it?
Well, what happened was I put out the Lonely Land record on my own back in 1999, and I only made it available at Waterloo Records, which is a local record store in Austin, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And it started showing up on their chart. Like, it was the best. It was every week they put out a top 20 record chart, and it was number one week after week. And it did that for about a year. And after about a year, I started getting a call from Monty Lippman, who was the president of Universal Records. And he was like, I don't know how he even got my number. He just called me up and he's like, hey, I'm president of Universal Records and I've been checking out this record of yours, Lonely Land. What's going on with that? I'm like, oh, I just made it myself and put it in this record store and it's doing pretty well. And he's like, okay, cool. Well, if you need anything, just give me a call. And then hung up. And then I was like, that's weird.
I don't feel like that conversation was over.
And so then a couple months later.
That sounds like one of my stories. And then I went to bed.
Yeah. And then a couple months later, I got another call from him. It's like, hey, it's Monty. You know, how's it going down there? I'm good. Anything new going on? No, just same old, same old. I'm just playing and, you know, enjoying my life. He's like, okay, well, great. And then again, done with that conversation. And then a couple months later, he's like, hey, I like this song Metal and Steel that's on your record. I think I can get it played at radio. Do you want to come to New York and have a chat and we'll talk about maybe signing you to Universal? And I'm like, sure. Mm-hmm. And so I had to like hire a lawyer and I just had kind of done it all on my own. So I got a lawyer and went there and I liked the guy and signed a deal and put it out on Universal Records. And then I'd been selling it in Austin for a year at that point when it came out. So we're like, well, how can we resell the same stuff to to my big market, which was Austin. So we added three songs and one of them was King of the World and added that to it.
So Steve Pultz was on the Bob and Tom Show one day.
Yeah.
And I'm talking to him and so Pultzy and I start getting chummy too, you know, and I always love the Rug Burns.
Yeah, yeah.
And I tell him, I go, do you know Ryan Adams? And he kind of got this funny look on his face and he goes, he's okay. I mean, I met him a couple times and I go, okay. And he goes, do you know Bob Schneider? And I go, well, because I was in album. I used to, hey, how you doing today? The 3 o'clock foreplay or whatever the hell it is four from the Stones. So I knew Lonely Land. I knew Metal and Steel. And I go, yeah, is that the Lonely Land record? And he goes, yeah, you should really check out Bob Schneider. I mean, if you like Whiskey Town and Ryan Adams, you'll like Bob Schneider. So I said, all right. So I stumbled upon the special mix on Amazon, King of the World, and I lost my mind when I heard it. Especially the line where it's, the guy told me I can remember every name of my third grade
class. And I can remember every name that I've ever heard before in my life. So I said, name everybody in your first grade class. And he did, I guess. Right.
I guess. And he did, I guess.
You don't know,
and
really.
I'm just like, oh,
he's just
my
been
God,
making up names.
This guy. So then I go back and I get, I check out the Scabs and Ugly Americans and I find out, I'm not sure what year. This is probably 05 or 06. So I look at you because
I'm a big fan of that year.
Yeah, you know, 05 and 06. Big years. And so then I find the Californian and songs heard with people, songs played with people in the room and underneath the onion tree. And I don't know. It's just, it was just great. So there, that's my Bob Schneider story.
That's cool. I love the fact that you found out about me from Steve Pultz. He's one of my best friends and has been, and was kind of influential. Back in 95, I was in a band called Ugly Americans and I was out in California making a record with Capricorn Records at the time, and just went to some random club one night and walked in and the Rug Burns were playing and I was just completely floored.
Unbelievable.
By how incredible they were. Their energy and the drummer was insane. But Steve Pultz was amazing.
Was it Stinky the drummer?
Stinky the drummer.
That's right. His name was Stinky. Yeah.
And I had just started a new band called the Scabs just a few months before that, and I was like, this is what I want the Scabs to be, just fun and insane, and I wanted to scare people and I want people to have a good time. And so I went back home and started the Scabs, and then never saw the Rug Burns again, never ran into Steve Pultz. And then in 2000, when I started doing a solo career thing, I started playing outside of Austin, and one of the first places I played was in San Francisco, and the opener was Steve Pultz. And we started talking, and he was telling me that he was in the Rug Burns, and I was like, oh. And I told him the whole story, and we bonded. And it was weird that we had both been in bands up until that point, and then we were both starting solo careers at that kind of the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And we realized quite quickly that we were basically cut out of the same completely effed up piece of cloth, and became fast and furious friends.
Yeah, that Steve Pultz's song about, I can't, the name of it escapes me, but his voice traveled really far. A brief history of my life.
Yeah.
And he, that's a heartbreaker. That That's a good song.
Yeah, he writes really sweet songs, and then he writes hilarious
and then he writes answering machine songs and,
yeah
stuff like that.
He's an incredible character, and after I met him, he actually ended up going on tour with me and riding around on the bus, and for 3 weeks, like, he never changed clothes. He slept in his clothes, wore the same clothes every day, and he was quite a character.
He never smells bad, though. How do you account for this?
I don't think he sweats.
I don't think he does. Yeah. I'm being serious.
No, some people don't sweat a lot.
I know a lady who doesn't sweat at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she freaks out when she gets hot because her body doesn't know how to regulate the temperature.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah.
But,
okay, if you and Poltz ever go out, I'll be a tech and stand in the back. Well, I just want to ride around in the van for a couple of weeks.
Oh, he's great. Yeah, it was
he
was,
did not say, yeah, we'll do that. Okay, go ahead.
It was quite a party having him on the road. That's back when he was still drinking and stuff. And the cool thing that came out of that tour was we started doing the song game that I've been doing ever since. I've been doing it for 12 years now, where we would pick a phrase, and then me, him, two of the guys in my band, Billy Harvey and Bruce Hughes, we would spend the day writing a song. Each of us would write our own song, and then that night after the show, we'd play the songs for each other, and then they'd have the phrase in the song somewhere.
Well, that sounds like a cool idea.
We ended up writing 20 songs in about 3 weeks each.
Are they ever going to see the light of day, you think?
Or? Oh, sure, yeah. I mean, I still... Most of the songs that are on my records are all from that process, from the song game writing process.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, I still do it to this day. We've got... there's probably like 30 people in it. We do it now. I do it by email, and I do it once a week. So every Friday, we have... songs are due, but we've had lots of people in it. Patty Griffin was in it for a while.
Oh my God. Another favorite. Yeah, she just came out with a new album that's really
she's
good.
She's amazing. And Jason Mraz is in it. He's been in it for years.
Oh, he's good. Yeah.
Yeah, he's great. And who else? Mike Doty from Soul Coffee.
We were talking about, Jess and I went to Bob's show on Wednesday night, and we stopped in the alley, and I follow you on Twitter, obviously, and mm-hmm. we have been doing the same thing with Mike a little bit that we're doing with you. Yeah. We're playing his music, and our thinking is, when he contacts us to tell us to stop,
right,
we'll say, while you're on the phone, why don't you come on the podcast?
Oh, he would be great on the podcast. He's so smart.
But he's doing Mike's doing a big thing with Soul Coughing and coming doing some repackaged stuff and Pledge Drive or something.
Well, he stopped playing with Soul Coughing.
Right.
I don't know, maybe 12, 13 years ago. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly how. It was a while ago. And then kind of refused to play any of that Soul Coughing stuff. He just played his solo stuff.
Which is great also. I mean,
it's wonderful.
It's wonderful. It's great.
But, I mean, there is a rich treasury of Soul Coughing material as well. And so I guess he's come to terms with it. Now he's re-recording all of it. He's just got done re-recording it. And now he's playing it live. And it's pretty exciting. If you're a big Soul Coughing
sure.
fan.
Now, Circles is one of the, just a great song.
But yeah, so he was in the song game for a little bit. Ben Folds, lots of people you haven't heard of that are mm-hmm. incredibly talented. Yeah.
Now, who normally, someone opened up for you when you were at, what was the name of that club that used to be the Discovery Zone?
Oh, now it's the Brew House. I don't know what it was then, but yeah.
Daggone it. It was an indoor venue we saw you at too.
Eskimo?
No. Did they open for
they
you?
They did open up
they
for
They did
me.
Open up for him, yeah.
They're great. No, this is one guy who opened up for you.
The only thing I remember about when Eskimo is they told me about this thing called space docking. It's where you poop into a condom.
No, you're not serious.
Then you put it in the freezer.
For what purpose?
I don't know. They're English.
You use it as a wet. Oh, they're English. Oh, yeah. Well, that explains.
I don't know what those guys are doing, but they were funny.
Did they travel with you, or was that just a one-time thing?
No, they were in a van, but no, we did a whole tour with them.
Oh, you did?
Yeah,
okay.
They opened
so
up
do you try us. To, when you team up with somebody, are they your friends, or is it a record company guy's idea? It just
depends. I've had my friends come and open up shows for me, who I really like. And then we've had, suggestions from the booking agency, or I'm not really with a record company. I have a deal with a small indie label out of Dallas, but they don't necessarily.
Well, you don't really need a record company anymore. I mean, what does a record company provide?
Well, they do
other
a lot
than irritation. That's my perception.
Well, they really do. You know, they do all the marketing for the record. So that's, they're still good for that.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't really need them to. You know, used to need them to kind of for the recording budget and for that. But now you can do a Kickstarter and get that money up front, make it yourself. And I think that's kind of the way it's going, because it's hard to get people to buy the record after it's done, but you can still get people to pay for the record before you make it,
which
is a weird paradigm.
Yeah,
but it's really the only thing you can do, because if it's not out there, you can't listen to it on Spotify. You can't download it for free.
All right.
But if you're a fan, you still want it. So it's this weird. I don't even know how long that's going to last. I mean, I hope it lasts for a while, but eventually people might be like, well, maybe we'll just not, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
They're doing it now, though. They're supporting the music by paying for it before it comes out.
So how many songs do you have that aren't on any albums and no one's really ever heard?
Well, I've probably written
I mean,
close to 2,000 songs.
Okay, songs that you think, oh, I'm going to put that on an album, but not this one. Maybe that's a better way to say it.
It'd be hard to say. I did figure out recently, because I want to do a show where I play for like 12 hours and without repeating any songs. And so I kind of put a set list together. And while I was doing that, I realized I could play for 6 days, 24 hours a day straight and never repeat a song. So,
oh my God.
How do you catalog
these? That's like
the
best answer to that question.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I figured that out on iTunes. I just put all the songs together and it tells you, oh, that's 6 days and 8 hours of songs.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's with no talking in between.
So how do you catalog all these? I mean,
they're just all on my computer.
Okay.
Whenever I write a song, I record it.
Okay.
And so those are on there. But the problem with that is there's another, oh, I don't know, maybe 500 songs that I wrote before I would record them into the computer. So I have all these other songs that kind of slipped through the cracks after a while. I mean, I have like the lyric sheets for them. I have some old cassettes with them on there. But, you know, some songs just get lost.
So your new album, Burden of Proof, 12 songs.
Yeah.
Kind of underachieving a bit for you, I'm guessing. But so did you just come up with 12 new ones, or did you bring some out of the old? I mean, hey, that old one fits with this. I mean, how does that work?
Well, usually the way it works is I'll have a song that I kind of want to build the record around. Mm-hmm. And with this record, it was a song called Hop on the World.
Oh, okay.
And so I knew I kind of wanted that to be on there. And then I was like, well, what other songs do I have that will go well with that song? And then I kind of put the rest of them together.
It's
usually
an inspiration piece.
Yeah, I start with about... So then from there, I came up with about 60 songs that I figure would work. And then I get together with the producer, and then we look at the songs together and we figure out which ones we think are going to work the best. And then we just keep narrowing it down. And then we'll record about 16 songs and then get it down to 12.
Now, my favorite song on the album is I Wish the World Would Blow Me.
Wish the wind would blow me.
I wish the wind would blow me. You said hop.
Or the world.
Or the world.
Or
what did my friend when you say? Fuck all y'all. Anyway, no. Oh,
I'd much rather have the world blow me than the wind, to tell you the truth.
No, but when did this... blow me is in the phrasing. So you thought, is that kind of a wink? It's like blow me. But then when did you decide that it was like, oh my God, this is the most serious... Because this is one of the most moving songs to me that you've ever written.
Oh, thanks. Well, yeah, I mean, you think, again, I don't ever know what I'm going to write.
Right.
I don't like sit down and go, okay, this is what's happening right now on radio, so I'll have to write a song that's got this many beats per minute with
this
feel, and it's going to be about the guy, you know, who lives on a prairie and has a little house
there
and
a girl
named Laura Ingalls. And I don't ever go that way. I just sit down and I just start playing guitar or keyboards and just hitting notes and just playing stuff. And then if I hear something that sounds interesting, I'll record that little bit and then kind of loop it. And then I'll get some ideas in my head. Oh, that makes me think of something, or I'll think of a phrase or a word or something. And then I'll sing that maybe, and that'll make me think of something else, and then maybe I'll add some more music. And then it's really a discovery process, kind of like, if you were digging up dinosaur bones. Mm-hmm. Like if you're in the desert, you don't know what's there. You know there's bones there. So you start digging, and sometimes it's just like a little tiny fish. You know what I mean? Like yeah. It's sure. That there's thousands of, and you just, and okay. And then every once in a while, ooh, this is a big bone here. This might be something incredible. And then you just get going, and then you realize, oh, it's just part of, you know, it's just like a sure. Half of a skull or something. But then every once in a while you
it's
uncover
a thigh bone from a T-Rex, right? Yeah.
Every once in a while you uncover some giant thing, and it's all there, and mm-hmm. It's all in place. You don't have to do anything. You just, it's just comes like completely finished, like that song 40 Dogs.
Yeah.
It was on, I just wrote that as fast as I could. Just wrote it down. There was actually another verse in it that I just cut out. There was more, I mean, and a lot of the good songs come that way. They just are there.
Yeah, 40 Dogs, it seems like it was a, I don't want to say hit because I don't want the negative, you know, but because it's such a great song, but it seems like, oh, well, this will come next. And it really seems like it's a wonderful, wonderfully built song, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely...
More hooks than a tackle box, the music director would have told me, or something like that.
Yeah, it's one of those...
But I know you're not shooting for a hook, but I mean, you know what I mean?
Well, it's definitely a song that when after I wrote it, I was like, oh, I'm happy with the way this turned out.
Yeah.
And it's weird because when I make a record, I try to never include any songs that are brand new on the record, because it's real similar to having a kid or something. Not kid's a bad analogy.
Okay, let's back up.
But it's like when you do something new, or I get really excited about it. Like mm-hmm. I might really fall in love with a song that might not be that good, and you really don't realize how good a song is until you've played it live for a few weeks right. or a few right. months, and then you realize. Mm,
and it keeps changing a little bit every time you play it.
It can change a little mm-hmm. bit. But you kind of get a. You're not really sure what it is right when you first do it. Mm-hmm. And then you find out pretty quickly when you start playing it live mm-hmm. how good a song is. And I think a lot of people go into a studio and write stuff in the studio, and they're super excited. Like, ooh, this is cool. This sounds great. This is amazing. And then a year later, you know, like 10 songs on the record suck because they right. weren't that right. great. It's hard mm-hmm. to write 12 songs right in a row. I mean, right. it takes me, I have to write 70 or 80 songs to get 12 good songs.
Well, I understand what you mean now about having kids, because if you have 12 kids and you concentrate on one and the other is shitty, then you really haven't had a success. Yeah, so, yeah. right. Yeah.
Well, you never know what you think all your kids are going to be like Einstein and
president.
And the president, and then, you know.
And then the older you get, you realize you have a favorite.
Yeah, oh yeah, let's face it. Yeah, we all have a favorite. I was an only child, so.
I only have one kid, so he's definitely my.
Well, that's good. Yeah, that's cool. How old is he?
Eight.
Yeah. Oh, fun gosh.
Age. Yeah. Yeah, it's great. He's a handful.
Yeah.
So does he think everybody's daddy writes songs and travels around the country?
No, he doesn't. But it's very, you know, that's normal. The normal thing mm-hmm. that I do what I do. I don't. So.
I feel like I'm doing a disservice if I don't have you play a song. I don't know.
Sure, yeah. Anything you want to hear? Yeah.
Something new. I want to hear something off the new album.
Yeah.
Something.
Well, I was going to ask too, you being a professional musician, there's a lot of parts of that, you know, you tour, you perform live, but that discovery process of, you know, noodling around, finding some words, is that your favorite part of the whole package?
I like both things. I like creating a song is wonderful. I like, it's like a puzzle for me. Mm-hmm. It's a solvable puzzle. Mm-hmm. There's an answer. And I like the fact that when I'm doing it, I feel like I'm doing what I was born to do. I feel like men are born to like focus on something, you know, like hunt down the beast mm-hmm. and then uh-huh. bring it home, bring it back right. to the cave. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's what I feel like with a song.
Puzzle
like
solvers.
I'm hunting it down. I'm mm-hmm. focused, and I'm not worried about my anxieties or rent or what's going on in mm-hmm. Afghanistan mm-hmm. or my eventual death or whatever, you know, all the things you can worry about if you have time on your hands.
Yeah.
I'm just focused on this one thing. And so I like that feeling of focusing on something and then also having something to show for it when you're done.
An end result, yeah.
Yeah, right. So I have this thing. But now if I just did that in a vacuum, I think I would probably eventually stop doing it. So then the part of playing that live in front of people is the other part. that's mm-hmm. pretty exhilarating and exciting, because it's something that I'm pretty afraid of doing. Like, I'm scared of crowds, I'm scared of people. So getting up in front of people and playing something that you made, I mean, I've kind of gotten numb to doing that. I don't think about doing it so much. I just mm-hmm. kind of just do it. But if I actually really thought about it, mm-hmm. and
you wouldn't go up on stage.
Well, I'd be really nervous. So yeah. anytime I have to do something new, like I've only done late night television once, and I was frightened, scared to death.
Was that on Letterman?
It was Leno.
Leno, that's Leno. Right.
But that was like 14 years ago. Haven't done it since. So if I had to do that now, I'd be scared to death, because it's something I don't normally do. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people that watch that. So
yeah.
right.
it would make me extremely uncomfortable.
How did you get introduced to music?
My dad's an opera singer, and he also played music his whole life. His dad was a musician. My dad worked his way through college in bands, playing in cover bands.
Okay.
And he's continued to do that his whole life. Like, he sings opera for a profession. He's retired now, but did that his whole life. But then at night, he'd have friends over, and he'd pick up the guitar and just play songs the whole night. Like, we didn't wow. have a stereo. It was just my dad playing. And then he taught me and my sister to do that. So we'd be part of that. You know, we'd perform songs from the time, probably when I was 4 or 5 years old.
Wow.
And then I did it my whole life. And when you're 4 or 5, you know, you're playing Row, Row, Row Your Boat. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then people go crazy. I mean, they're like, you are like Michael Jackson. And so I have in my head that, like, ingrained into my head that I'm just amazing.
Right, right.
And it's the only reason I'm still doing what I'm doing, because I've never been amazing. I thought I was incredible. Like, I have this idea that I'm just the best at what I do. But then I listened to the music that I played, like, in high school mm-hmm. and even in my 20s. And I'm just like, wow, this is just so bad. But I thought it was the greatest.
Right.
And because I did, I just kept doing it. And I think once you do it over and over again, and eventually you'll end up with some decent material.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you play the cornerstone of the new CD, Burden of Proof. It's Hop on the World.
I don't know if I could play that on guitar, though.
Oh. Play what you want to off the new CD. How about that? How about that, Bob?
All right, I'll play you this song. This is a pretty sad song.
Okay, good. Perfect.
I had a dream I was dying to see you again. And when I awoke, the world was on fire, dying. And then I saw the sun burst into flame. All at once, everything changed for the better. It seems like it does in a dream sometimes. I saw a sign there in the skyway, painted in gold. And what it said was, love will always weed out the weak. Watch where you go and watch what you speak. And I made a promise I knew I could keep. I buried my heart in a hole so deep. I've never been able to find it again. And I saw the sun burst into flame. Then all at once, everything changed for the better. Seems like it does in a dream.
it's Weed Out the Week?
From, yeah.
Burden of Proof?
Weed Out the Week.
What, play the start of that again. Where did that...
Well, it sounds like a Beatles song.
No, but it's so, that's so, and I...
Like people, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. And especially if you play it like this, with that note. But if you take that note out, that's not so bad.
My cynical nature says, oh, this is going to kill him. You come up with that melody, it's like, oh, because that's just fucking heartbreaking. Just the melody for me is like, because I heard that start playing and it's, oh God.
Well, that song came out of that. It came out of that song game.
Oh,
and
really?
The phrase was "weed out the week."
Mm-hmm.
So I had to use that phrase in the song somewhere. And,
well done.
Thanks.
Yeah,
I bet you won that round.
Yeah, you probably won. You probably won that day. Yeah.
Oh. Well, and Chick is the perfect example of, and I'm the same way. He more so with your music, of the emotional connection you have with music. How comfortable are you with your listeners? You know, because that's what most people are. They come to you, you know, wanting to compliment you because they made, you know, an emotional connection with it, right?
Well, that's the goal. The goal is to have the songs have some sort of emotional resonance with the listener. That's what I want. When I'm listening to a song, I want to cry. I want to feel not so. I want the song to be about something that I think about all the time or I feel, but I've not been able to express into words. And then I hear somebody sing it or sing about it and go, oh, I went through that. I feel that. And then I don't feel so alone. And then when they do it in a way that's sort of interesting or profound or clever, then I'm like, oh, not only am I not alone, but I'm part of this organization of people, these human beings that can make art and beauty. And then I feel like lifted up and proud and happy and all. And that's what I'm looking for. And it's a tall order. And I don't know if there's this thing nowadays with music, and I don't know if it's true or not, but I feel like a lot of music made by like younger people or music that younger people like, there seems to be like a lack of it. In fact,
a lack of emotion.
Like, right. It's almost like if there is sort of an emotional connection or if it does say something like real, then... they don't want that. They're like, no, that's getting in the way of me enjoying my social media or me enjoying, I'm doing my thing. Like I'm enjoying my day. I want this music as sort of background wallpaper to my life.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I want it to like indicate to other people who I am as a person. Like this is part of who I am. But I don't want to necessarily have to like expend a lot of energy listening to it.
It's not personal. It's personal on a selfish level. Like, I don't want to be a part of a group. I want this person to talk to me individually because this is a part of my life and what I'm doing. Instead of what you said about like, wow, I'm connecting with this person and realizing that we share this and we experience this together.
Right. There's a lot. There's a lot of stuff going on that would take away from let me see what's going on Twitter while I'm watching three shows, one on TV, one on my computer and one on my iPad.
Right.
And I don't know if that's the case, but for me, music, I want music to kind of save me from myself and my life and my, you know,
and get it out. And it's almost like, it's right, not, like, it's emotional vomiting, I guess.
I'm having a hard time.
Yeah.
So I want the music to either echo that or save me from it in some way.
Right.
And maybe these kids, like they've been raised well or something, you know, they weren't beaten, they weren't abused, they weren't neglected. And so they feel good about themselves, so they don't need.
So they don't need to.
They don't need music to serve the same purpose, maybe as our generation. I don't know.
I don't know either.
Seems sad a little bit when you put it like that.
I don't know.
I think he's right, but I don't want to accept it.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Do you think anybody sits down and okay, I'm going to listen to the new Bob Schneider album, or is it just all background?
We do.
Sure, but I mean,
My son did that the other day with Journey. Like, he's in love with Journey. That was his first concert. He's 10.
Uh-huh.
And he's just like, I think that they have more good music. And I was like, yeah, bud, they do. He's like, well, we want to listen to all of it. And I was like,
okay,
all right, this could be so much worse. So I am with you on this journey.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah,
the journey of journey.
Yeah, the journey of journey. Do you ever have a song and in the writing process, you're like, fuck, this is sad. And like makes, draws that emotion from you, makes you cry?
Well, usually if I'm writing a sad song, I'm probably sad.
You're probably sad already.
And it's weird. Like if I'm going through like some heartbreak or something, right, or some emotion like that, I will end up writing songs like that. They usually end up not being very good because I'm so close to it at that point, mm-hmm, that I can't really, mm-hmm, be objective.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like writing stuff like, I'm hurting. And I think, and I'm like,
then you're in Nine Inch Nails.
No.
So what are you going to do then?
No, but right, then I'm like, oh, this is the best song I've ever written. I'm hurting. And you know, you listen to it like a month later, like, that's not very good.
Right.
But a month later, you can write a song about that experience.
Right.
In a profound way that you couldn't, mm-hmm, have if you wouldn't have that experience.
See, but when you wish the wind would blow me, that the phrase where you said, I wish my shoes were empty and I was still in bed and they're beside you. I mean, how do you sing that and mean that and not just burst into tears every time you sing it?
Because
that is so, the imagery there and the thought and the phrasing and the, I just don't know.
Well, what I'll tell you, the way it works is like after the song's written and then I'm just performing, I'm just feeling whatever I'm feeling during the performance.
Right.
So
yeah,
if I'm going through a heart, like if I'm just had a breakup or something and I sing that song live, I may start crying. But if it's just like a normal day like today where I'm just whatever, everything's fine and
right,
dandy,
right,
I'll be singing that song and I'll be like, what's that guy wearing? What is that?
Yeah.
Is he wearing, I don't know.
You're so good at that when you're you're in concert, you're so good at talking to the audience and...
Oh yeah, you put on a hell of a show.
You really do.
This is a terrible story, but I was with people the other day and they said they took their niece to the Justin Bieber concert. She goes, it just wasn't much of a show. It wasn't entertaining. And I was like, of course it fucking wasn't. You were at a Justin Bieber show.
Well, I'm a believer, so don't be talking shit about Justin Bieber.
So funny. No, we were at your show and you interact with the crowd the appropriate amount and you're funny and it's a really great show.
Well, it's one of the only places that I feel completely at liberty to say whatever comes into my head.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In normal life, I feel like I always have to like watch what I'm saying, watch what I'm doing. There's, mm-hmm, all these rules and I'm not even sure what they are most of the time. So I just try to like smile and be appropriate.
Right.
But on stage, I will say anything that comes into my head.
Game
and I've
on.
Said
yeah.
the, I mean, I've talked about having sex with my grandma in heaven and stuff. And I don't think of that stuff beforehand. I don't talk like that when I'm off stage.
Yeah.
But when I'm on stage, I was like, oh, that'd be kind of funny to say. You know.
Well, what do you do when you're not on stage? I mean, when you're not doing music, what are you doing?
Well, I have, like I said, I have an 8-year-old, so yeah. I watch him half the time and then I'm playing the other half of the time and then I'm working the other half of the time.
Okay.
So I'm pretty busy.
Yeah.
Do you have
no hobbies?
You have Netflix?
You play golf?
I make art as well, mm-hmm, visual art. So I spend...
Oh yeah, what's your Stinking Hand? Is that the blog spot?
Yeah, if you go to Stinking Hand at... If you just go to...
BobSchneider.com, it doesn't have the music anymore, right?
Bob no, Schneider. If you go to BobSchneider.com, there's a link that will take you to the Stinking Hand blog,
right,
and then
right,
you can see the art and poetry that I do.
Okay.
So I do that as well. I don't have a lot of time to devote to that, but I stay busy. I like to do stuff. I feel bad when I'm not.
Are you on the road
things.
50 weeks a year? It seems like you're, if not... The Saxon and Austin, I mean, you're somewhere, right?
It seems like I'm on the road all the time because I'm playing all the time, but most of my gigs are in Texas. Most of my gigs are actually most of the gigs I play, I'm in bed at my house at the end of the night, but
right,
I'll play anywhere from 200 to 250 shows a year.
Wow.
But not most of them in Texas. I'd mm-hmm say 150 are in Texas.
Yeah. Yeah. So when did it start as far as you thought, okay, I'm going to make a living at this? Was it right away with Rockhead or Joe Rockhead, or was it
Well, I was
Dawn down the line, or
I was actually in school. I was going to the University of Texas at El Paso. It's kind of a story of how I got there, but I ended up there. And while I was there, I was taking art classes.
Because you started college in Munich, right, or something like that?
I did. I went to school at the University of Maryland in Munich, Germany, for 2 years. That was just a party school. That was just
really
straight partying. That's all we did. And so then I dropped out of school for a year just to kind of get it together.
And what did your opera singer father say to that?
My parents were alcoholics and partiers, so they were like, they supported my alcoholism and partying. And so I moved home for a year and lived with them and continued to party. And then I was like, oh, I got to get out of here. This isn't working either. So I ended up in El Paso going to school, taking art courses. And while I was there, this guy, Terry Allen, who's a really fairly famous fine artist and also a singer-songwriter, came and did a lecture and told us that the degree that we were seeking was not going to help us in our career. If we wanted to make art, we should just make art. And not go to school. And
did
it made sense.
Did the school pay him to come and lecture?
Ho, ho, ho! Time out! Carrie! Cut!
No, he was drunk. Okay. He had been partying in Juarez all night. He was smoking a cigarette in the classroom, wearing shades. But he looked like an artist and he sounded like an artist and it made sense to me. And I dropped out of school about a week later, moved to Austin. And I was like, I'm going to try this music thing and I'll give it like a year or two. And if it doesn't work, I'll just go back to school and finish getting an art degree and become an artist. And so after 2 years, I was a complete failure and I was getting ready to move back to Germany and just cause I was broke and not doing well at all. And these friends of mine were starting a band, and they said I could join the band if I didn't drink, because I was a pretty heavy partier back then. Mm-hmm. And so I said, okay, I can do that. So I joined their band, got a job at a t-shirt company as an artist, and within a year, I was able to quit that job in the art department, and that was in 91. And I've been doing nothing but playing music since 91.
Nice.
So,
wow. So I guess the most fulfilling time of your life creatively is right now, or was it?
This is definitely the best I've ever felt in my life. I mean, I owe it all to, you know, being a father, mm-hmm. and, you know, I have a lovely girlfriend and, a wonderful ex-wife. And, no, things are great. I love the guys that I work
There's
with.
There's a lot to be said for having a nice ex-wife or a nice ex.
Oh, no. I hear horror stories all the time.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. I think I get the award for the best ex-wife. If there was an award, I would nominate myself.
Mary Bear's pretty close.
Yeah, but your ex-wife's pretty good.
But anyway.
I'm sure yours is great, too. She can be in the award.
No, she's great. And so, things are good.
Congratulations. That's awesome that you can say that. I mean, that must feel good to be able to say all of those things.
Yeah, I'm very lucky.
But you probably, because we were talking a little bit in the alley, and we were talking about Mike Doty and his trials and tribulations with Soul Coughing. And I'm guessing that you've been through pretty much every scenario and every group that you've ever been in. Like, there's been a malcontent, there's been someone who's distant, there's been...
Well, when you play in a band, you're kind of at the mercy of your bandmates. And like when I stopped doing that in 99, I was just like, I can't, I don't want to listen to what the drummer has to say in terms of what the musical direction of the band should be.
But you get the Scabs, you do Scabs, those guys are back together every now and then, right?
I still play with the Scabs, with that band, 4 or 5 times a year, but we just show up and play the same songs that we've been playing for 10 years. So that's just kind of an excuse to get together and party.
Catch up. Yeah.
Yeah.
You reference, this is a religious question, you reference Jesus and, you know, a lot of songs, it seems like, compared to other people.
Sure.
And do you have, are you a religious guy? Did you grow up in church or?
I did. I grew up pretty religious. My mom's a Catholic. She went to Catholic school. I ended up going to German Catholic school, which I feel is like super Catholic school.
Yeah. German steroids.
Nuns.
Yeah.
German nuns.
I don't know who said it, but Shiite Catholic? Is that Jim Gaffigan? Shiite Catholic. Yeah.
So I even have like books like my notebooks from like first and second grade when I was, and it's all like Jesus. So like there's a lot of Jesus stuffed into my early childhood. And I love using Jesus in my songs and other people, you know, like Wizard of Oz stuff.
Sure.
And famous characters that people grew up with and have a very personal relationship with. Everybody has, mm-hmm. whether you believe in Jesus or don't believe in Jesus, you have a relationship with that character.
Yeah.
Same with Wizard of Oz or whatever. So when you use them in a song, it's almost like you just say the name and all of a sudden the song becomes this completely personal thing to the listener, mm-hmm. that if you just said Harold, there's not going to be as much baggage there.
Right.
They're not going to be able to personalize it as much mm-hmm. as they would mm-hmm. if you used Jesus or the Tin Man or Dorothy.
Right. Yeah, because when you say it, I grew up in a pretty religious household. And when you...
Fundamentally.
Yeah, religious. Yeah.
And charismatic fundamental.
Sure. Yeah. But when you say it, it doesn't have that negative connotation that I have with it. Like, religion wasn't fun when I was growing up. You know what I mean? And Jesus seemed like he was a punishing Jesus. But when you say it, it seems like, damn, he sounds like a nice guy.
No, Jesus has always been the guy.
Right.
He's like super like, hey, love your, turn the other cheek. And
right.
And like.
No, I realize that now as an adult, but when I was a kid, it was bad news.
Well, you know what we have to do here now? We have to play Captain Kirk then.
Oh, because I mentioned Jesus.
You mentioned Jesus.
Sure, yeah.
Captain
All
Kirk.
Right,
yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
I want to be like Captain Kirk. I want to get up every day and love to go to work. Don't want to be like Mr. Spock. Just want to kick out the jams and rock the block. And I just want to feel good. I don't want to hurt nobody. Just want to get a good time out of my life. Wanna be like Cassius Clay, I wanna change my name, go on the way. I wanna be like Marilyn Monroe, be loved by everybody that I know. And I just wanna feel good. I don't wanna hurt nobody. Just wanna get a good time out of my life. Won't be like Jesus Christ and keep the party moving, giving good advice. I don't need to be Superman. I just want to do the best I can. And I just want to feel good. I don't want to hurt nobody, baby. Just want to get a good time out of my life.
Bob.
Thank you.
Can you play another song from the new album?
Sure, yeah.
Why don't you play?
You're going to ask me to play something I don't know how to play.
Why don't you play whatever you want. Does Jess not have any request?
He's played what I wanted to hear, and then I listened to the show this morning, so I'm good.
Well, and if I can
give
you a compliment, Madeline is one of the most, powerful. It kind of you come in low. You're real powerful at the end. I love songs that are long. That's one of those songs that's like, thank God he didn't end this at 3:30 or 4 minutes, because I think it's about a 7-minute song.
It's a long one, yeah.
And it's awesome. It's got a great bass line, whatever. But it's real emotional. I don't expect you to play it because it's a long song. There's a lot going on.
Wait, did it make you emotional?
No, absolutely. No, listen to me.
That's the only time you're emotional is with music, though.
That's not necessarily true.
It's a little true.
My 9-year-old daughter called me mm-hmm. Right before we started, actually, and she had allergy testing.
Yeah.
And she had to get pricked 30
times. Oh, yeah, that's the worst. My kid had to do that.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And
that's bad.
She just, she couldn't hug me, but she wanted to call me.
Aww.
So, yeah, I can get emotional.
Yeah. Your kids, they bring out.
Yeah.
When Lovely Creatures came out, I gave it to my son who was 4 at the time. Mm-hmm. And he like slept with the CD
because
it had like a picture
the snake
of me on it.
Yeah, the octopus.
Yeah, the octopus.
Yeah, that's a great.
But
cover.
he would just like be in the car just looking at it, and like he couldn't get over the fact that I was on this.
I mean, you had
thing.
A superhero look in that picture.
Yeah,
you know what
did.
I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's an awesome
yeah, it's
cover.
Very epic, heroic.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it just broke. I mean, it just crushed me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like having this little guy just. You know, he just, I'm yeah. like
he
his
loved
dad.
You that much.
Yeah, it's amazing.
He loved you that much.
And even when this record came out, like he got super excited. He's like, oh, Dad, let's listen to it. And we yeah. rode around the car and he like got the booklet, you know, because he
sure.
can read and he's
yeah.
reading all the lyrics and he's pointing out like the spelling mistakes and the facts and stuff like that.
And that's an eyeball. yeah, stuff like that.
So,
yeah.
but it was, I mean, I just couldn't.
Is
I
he
just
playing?
Never felt so good in my life. What's
yeah.
that?
Is he playing?
We've been writing some songs together. He co-wrote a song on the record called Please Ask for Help.
No which, way.
Yeah, which was, again, was that was the songwriting phrase for the week, Please Ask for Help. And this was a couple years ago. He was probably 5 at the time. And I was like, hey, I got to write a song called Please Ask for Help. Will you help me? And I gave him the mic. And then I just started playing some chords on the
mm-hmm,
piano.
Mm-hmm.
And he sang the entire chorus. And in fact, you can hear him singing it just... barely in the background on the actual recording, and it's when from that day that we wrote the song together. It was pretty cool.
You have to play it, or do you know it?
I don't know
well,
if
was,
I
well,
know
we
how
can,
to play.
We can play the CD.
That's okay.
It's a lot of these songs on the album are I play on piano,
mm-hmm.
so they're difficult for me to play on with the.
So
guitar.
What do you also you play trumpet in concert? Sometime.
I play one song. Yeah. I played trumpet on one song.
I always thought that you picked up the trumpet as a bet back when you partied. I bet you can't play the trumpet. And you're going, like, hell, I can't. And you pick up a trumpet and go. Is that how it happened?
Or? I played it in 6th grade. And then I never played it again. And then I bought one for about $40 at a pawn shop a few years ago. And I'll use it to write songs with sometimes. I'll just blow into mm-hmm. it. And,
really?
Yeah. And just make sounds come out of it. And I did that with the... this song Slower Deer that's on Lovely Creatures. And then when it came time to record the record, we got an incredible trumpet player, Eric Telford, who plays trumpet on the rest of that record.
Mm-hmm.
And he played the trumpet part on the song. And afterwards we're like, oh, that was amazing, but it was too good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
So I had to go back and play it. Because it didn't sound, it needed to sound like somebody who couldn't play the playing.
So
that was
let's
me.
See, where can we find that guy? Yeah. Oh, that's right.
Have you had any formal instruction with instruments or music? Or
I took piano lessons for about 10 years.
Oh, wow.
When I was a kid. But I didn't practice.
From a German nun?
No. I the problem was I didn't practice ever, so I never got
right.
good at it. I just kind of, you know, would just show up at the... lesson and the teacher would be frustrated with me. But right after I quit playing piano, my dad taught me a blues progression on piano.
Mm-hmm.
And that was right before I went to college. And then when I went to college, I would play piano every day because there was a piano in downstairs in the dorm where I lived.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would actually go to they had a piano in the student keller where everybody drank, and they would turn off the stereo at 1:45, 15 minutes before the bar closed, and I'd be wasted
right.
at that point. So I'd just get on the piano and just start making up songs and about, you know, my friends or whatever had happened that day. And one night this lady asked me to be in the talent show. She's like, I'm putting the talent show together. Would like you to do it. I'm like, yeah, no problem.
Heck yeah.
About a month later, I see her like just walking around the, you know, grounds or whatever, and she's like, hey, we've put you as the headliner for the talent show.
Wow.
tomorrow. And I was like, what? And she's like, yeah, you told me you were gonna play this and I had no recollection of it. So I got two friends together and we went, and I made them part of the act just because I was just scared to death. And I wrote like 5 songs and did like a 30-minute ended the talent show. And that was really kind of after that talent show, I went from nobody knowing who I was to pretty much everybody in the school kind of knowing who I was.
Mm-hmm.
It's a small school. It's only mm-hmm. about 2,000 students there.
Right.
So it was that was the thing that kind of was like, this music thing might be kind of cool. Right. Way more exciting than art, where I was getting no recognition.
With in the relationship department with girls, did it change after the after the talent show too?
Absolutely. Yeah. No, that was different. No, it's amazing.
Hot and cold running women.
No, I can't deal with rejection at all. I'm terrified.
Bob,
I think
we
need
to sit down.
No, I asked a girl out, I think in like seventh grade, and she said no, and I was like, well, I'll never do that again.
Well, that sucked. I'm glad I don't have to do that anymore. Yeah.
But the thing is, if you play music, you don't have to ask girls out. They will come after you.
They're throwing their clothes at you. Yeah.
The problem is you end up with
the girls who will throw clothes at you.
You end up with the wrong women.
Yeah.
Rump, rump, rump.
Yeah.
Well, I have plenty of questions.
Go, man, go. What do you got? Sure?
Do you ever get mistaken for anyone else? Just your looks or maybe
not my looks, but the name Rob Schneider, obviously. It's pretty close.
We're so sorry
to Rob Schneider.
And you couldn't be more different.
So have you had someone come to your show thinking they were?
I don't know. I mean, if they did, I did.
They were pleasantly surprised.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing about this business, any entertainment business, is 99.9% of the people that are actually going to wait around to talk to you are going to tell you how great you are.
Right.
Nobody's going to hang out and tell you.
Let me tell you something.
I came here to see Rob Schneider.
No, those people are at home on their laptop that are going to tell you how much they hate you.
Oh, absolutely. That's the thing. People do. They hide behind their computer at home.
Oh, it's terrible.
Have you ever had a Twitter fight with anybody?
No. I retweeted something that We Fail, these guys that are so funny, wrote one time. And I got all these gay guys were upset, or one guy was upset, and he was like, this is homophobic. And I was like, whatever, it's a joke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, but no, I don't have enough followers to get people too riled up. So
you only need one, really.
Yeah, that's true.
I made a joke. I said, does anybody ever get caddies and painters confused? They're usually in the same uniform. I thought it was funny. And this guy was like, that's not funny. You're not funny today. You haven't been funny for 3 days. And I was like, what? How does that happen?
Wow.
Yeah. And I was like, I think he's having a bad
day.
Guy
got touched by a caddy.
Yeah, I know. Something happened.
Yeah.
That's like, well, I'll tweet, a link for your stuff, or a new episode of our podcast is out, or we've got somebody come. All you do is promote yourself on Twitter. Why aren't you funny like you are on the radio? And I'm like, well, it's kind of a promotional tool, dude, and this is mine.
Yeah.
So leave me alone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really bad at that, because stuff really gets to me easily.
Yeah, chicks, he blocks people.
I will say, I did the Adam Carolla podcast,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he has probably about the same number of followers as you do. You get about 80,000
followers. Yeah, somewhere
around there. So I did that show, and then I made the mistake, because they posted something on his site, and mm-hmm. then people have comments there.
Oh.
I made the mistake of reading those comments, because they're not my fans. They're Adam Carolla fans.
Right.
So to me, they don't know who I am.
Right.
I'm just some guy that's like, Adam's not talking for mm-hmm. a few minutes.
Right.
So,
right.
And I read like three of those, and I was like, all right, I got to mm-hmm. turn this off.
Yep.
I can't.
Well,
she can't deal with that.
She doesn't handle
those. I don't do it anymore. I made the mistake of, I was like, let's read some of our comments from iTunes. And I was like,
podcast, reviewing our podcast.
Okay. Well,
one of them was just like, dump Jess.
Yeah. He was like, she's the worst. Your podcast would be so much better without her. And I was like, I'm glad I read this before we started one.
But you know what? I like it, because it's good having a woman who's, I don't want to say polarizing, but who brings out emotion.
Mm-hmm.
If you were just some dull woman, mm-hmm. like whatever.
Well, that's true.
Dull
that's
women are the worst.
They are the worst.
I didn't even know.
It's a compliment.
It's either dump Jess or who's Jess. Which one would you like?
Right, yeah. So,
by the way, Adam has five times the number of followers.
I was just saying.
400,000.
All right, well, this was a few years ago.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, that's possible. We're all growing.
Okay, so living in Austin, obviously a lot of good musicians come through.
You ever go to the Bat Bridge?
I've been to the Bat Bridge three times Every time I've gone there, there's been no bats.
I've been there twice, yeah. And it's before I knew you, but I've been there twice and never. I air quoted. I don't know why. But I've never seen bats there either.
Well, they're only there during the summer.
Right.
When
the bugs are there.
Right. Well, in the winter they fly down to Mexico. They live in a cave in Mexico.
I want a winter.
And then
they
migrate to Austin and live under this bridge for like 2 or 3 months during the middle of the summer. Yeah. And then that's when you can see them fly out at night. Wow. But like every time I'm like, you know, there and it's getting dark. I wonder when these bats are going to come out. No bats. They're like, yeah, they don't show up for like another 2 months.
And is it true there are no mosquitoes or bugs or they're very low in Austin? Or
Well,
no? That's chicks go to when anybody says
there's definitely
it.
No mosquitoes around the bridge during the summer. The best place to watch the bats, actually, if you go to Austin and you're there during the summer, is to go to the Capitol building because the entire building is lit up and that attracts the bugs, mm-hmm. and then the bats are flying around the Capitol the entire time, eating those bugs all night.
I got to get to Austin.
It's pretty cool.
Got to get back.
For the bats.
We'll go to Chewy's. We'll hang out at your house, Bob. It'll be great.
You're welcome. Mi casa es su casa.
We've got that on recording.
Speaking of Austin, I'm saying a lot of great bands come through. Who are some of the bands that you, do you make an effort to go see some other guys, some other bands?
Well, one of my favorite artists right now lives in Austin. His name is Danny Malone. He's got an incredible record called Balloons. Which is like a masterpiece. He just came out with it. He's one of my favorites. Lex Land is another incredible singer. She was on The Voice recently.
Oh, really?
And did well on that. But she's great. And I don't know. I like this guy out of, I like James Blake. He's an English guy. Mm-hmm. Skrillex.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I like stuff that's a little weird sometimes. Yeah. So,
yeah. We were talking about you, or I was talking to you, not about you, when we took a little break, and it was, we were talking about Nashville, and you said you hadn't spent much time there, and it wasn't your favorite place in the world. But I just thought it was interesting that you said, even if you don't like it, the country music, those guys are, that's talented, that's mad, that. The comparison between Nashville and Austin in the music industry.
Yeah, they're incredibly skilled technicians when it comes to country music. They crank it out and they do it in a way that nobody else can do it anywhere in the world. I mean, they're incredible.
Yeah.
You know, whether you like that music or not, they're amazing at it. And Austin, we just don't have that sort of professional. It's just people are there because it's a great place to live. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of great musicians there that happen to live there because it's a cool place to live, but they're not the most professional. The most professional musicians live in LA, live in Nashville, mm-hmm. maybe New York. Mm-hmm. You know, the people that have their shit together. But not,
I think you do.
Well, it seems that way, but I really
don't. No, and you cover, I don't know if I want to say it's hip hop, but you can do a hip hop type song. Did you listen to any hip hop growing up? Like,
oh,
was
that
your? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I actually.
Well, did you? Yeah, he was talking about this morning.
I missed that break.
Show,
sorry.
The German rap.
Oh, I did hear you say that.
Oh, yeah. I love German rap.
Any American rap that you.
I love Kanye West.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan. Yeah. I like Ludacris.
Yeah.
I love Ludacris's tone or his voice, but I don't know what it is about it, but it's deep, but it's. Emotional.
I don't listen to a lot of rap now. Yeah. I used to listen to a ton of it growing up. I went to a military high school in Germany, and so we had a lot of kids that were like, that had come, you know, their parents had come from like New York, and mm-hmm. so we were listening to like Grandmaster Flash, like the beginning of hip hop when I was in high school.
Yeah.
So that was kind of cool. I've always liked it, and it's constantly change. I have a hard time with music that I think is like lowest common denominator, mm-hmm. where it's like really caters to where it feels like, I don't want to call it stupid, but there's
a
lack of intelligence,
mm-hmm.
to
sure.
I don't
sure.
know. So any music like that, I have a really hard time with. I feel like there is, I've heard a lot of rap that seems, it doesn't seem as enlightened or as clever as the stuff that I really
enjoyed,
kind of enjoyed a few years back. But who who knows, you know, that could just be me.
Is there, and is there
not listening to the right stuff? There's probably a lot of stuff that's going on that maybe not, might not be on the radio as well.
Is there a type of music that you still want to do? Like, do you want to do like a country western album or anything like that? Like sound, I don't necessarily mean.
I don't know. I just recorded a record. I have a side project called the Texas Bluegrass Massacre where we do my songs, but with bluegrass instruments, banjo, fiddle, mandolin, accordion, dobro. And I love the way those instruments sound and I love playing that music live, but we just recorded a record of it and I wouldn't want to listen to that record.
Really?
Mm. I know that if my management hears this, they're going to be upset. No, it's it doesn't do it for me.
Yeah. Have you tried opera?
I haven't, but we are getting ready to start a Kickstarter to fund getting a bunch of my music orchestrated. And I'm going to perform it with the Austin Symphony next year.
Oh, wow.
I was just going to say.
Hopefully tour the country and play with different symphonies across the
country. We have a great one here in Indianapolis.
I'd love to do it.
Yeah.
The your Christmas album, that immediately jumped in my mind.
Yeah.
The lush strings and the orchestration. And your voice is so, fits that, you know, it's unique and.
Yeah, well, that I did the Christmastime record was the one I did right before Burden of Proof, and I enjoyed doing that so much that I ended up using those guys to record this new record, and then also the Tosca String Quartet, and I had to write string arrangements for the whole record, and while I was doing that, I was like, oh, it'd be great to even take this to the next level and get a whole orchestra to play this music.
Right.
So that's the next.
Oh, wow.
That's the next step. It's going to be a learning experience for sure.
Do you do any covers live?
I do occasionally.
Your Valentine's Day show, you did some, right?
Yeah. I did some standards for the Valentine's Day show, but I got a lot of flack for that.
What?
I got a lot of people saying that they wanted to hear my music.
Right.
They didn't want to hear me do covers.
And that's why I asked, because you have such a big catalog and you play, you know, I thought the cover thing, eh.
Yeah, well, I've done two of those now, two Valentine's show and then two Christmas shows, all with the Moonlight Orchestra, which is another sort of side project. It's the Moonlight Orchestra is basically the band that plays on Burden of Proof. And yeah, I tempered it the second time. Both times I did less covers and more of my stuff. And people, it seemed to strike a balance.
Who produced this album?
Dwight Baker. He produced the last four records.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Cool.
Dwight Baker, the hitmaker.
Yeah.
I'll tell him that. Well, do you already requested all your?
I said I liked 40 Dogs. I just.
Oh, yeah. You want to play 40 Dogs?
Sure, yeah.
Okay.
All right.
I like 40 Dogs.
Good.
It's cigarette chicken.
I think he started about an hour ago.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Okay.
We jumped in.
We got sidetracked.
Well, if you yell it out, if I spell it out, will you hear me if I tell you about what I have to say before it gets too late? It's not easy as I said it'd be, but there's something right about you and me. Something right about you and me. You're the color of a bird of brook, the color of a sideways look from an undercover cop in a comic book. Color of a storm in June, you're the color of the moon. You're the color of the night, that's right. Color of a fight, you move me. You're the color of the color part of the Wizard of Oz movie. And we're like Romeo and Juliet, we're like 40 dogs. And cigarettes, we're like good times that haven't happened yet, but will. And I can tell you where we'll be when the whole world falls in to the sea. We'll be living ever after happily. And all them boys taking you for granted, they tell you what they want with their eyes slanted. I don't like the way that they look at you. I don't like the way they talk to you. I don't like the way they talk to you. I wouldn't let them talk to you like that. Put them up high and reach for the ceiling. Tumble down the wall. Damn it, I'm reeling. Ain't no crime, it's just dreams we're stealing. Anything to get them all this feeling. You take the high and I'll take the low. We'll get there before you know it. Ain't got much time to waste. We got too much life to taste. We're like Romeo and Juliet. And we're like 40 dogs. Cigarettes, we're like good times that haven't happened yet. I can tell you where we are gonna be when the whole world falls into the sea. We'll be living ever after happily. Well, sometimes you remind me of a moonbeam, or the ghost of a moonbeam out on the beach down by the coast, just slipping through the net like the most beautiful thing that I've ever seen. So come out tonight, come out with me, baby. Throw the careful into the crazy. Turn the sky black into a sky blue. Turn a close shave into a hoo-hoo. What I say is true. Make a fire, gotta burn a few, yeah. Make a fire, gotta burn a few. We can do what we wanna do, cause we're like Romeo and Juliet. And we're like 40 dogs. Cigarettes were like good times that haven't happened yet, but will. I can tell you where we're gonna be when the whole world falls to the sea. We'll be living ever after happily.
Bob Schneider. That one's from Lovely Creatures. What is that, two albums ago?
Yeah.
Yeah. Lovely Creatures, Perfect Day. And now.
Yeah, it was weird. I was singing, I was like, the girl that I wrote that song about, I mean, we broke up like 2 years ago. So it's weird. It's like, I never think about it. But for whatever reason, I was just thinking about it now.
Fuck, I'm sorry.
No, it's cool. It kind of like, it just definitely changed the whole vibe of that song.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, I love it. I love that song.
Yeah.
Good one.
You did that on Rachel Ray, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, I remember when you DVR'd that. Yes. Like,
are you and Rachel friends? Or?
Yeah, we've become friends. I met her at South by Southwest years ago.
Okay.
And then she invited me on her show. I've done it a couple times. It's the only national television show that I've done in the last 14 years.
I was going to say, because I'll see it, because I get Google alerts for you, and I go, he'll be on the Rachel. I go, so that's the only time I rush home to get to record the Rachel Ray show.
And her husband, John Cusimano, who has a band called The Cringe, has been in the songwriting game doing that for years now.
Oh,
probably
no kidding.
Like 3 years. Hmm. He never misses a week. Writes a song every week.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
How long has that guitar been with you?
I've had this guitar for maybe 5 or 6 years. It looks older than it is because it doesn't have a pick guard. You're supposed to just play it with your fingers, but I use a pick when I play it live, and so I've worn a hole in the side of it. Normally, steel string guitars have a pick guard here that stops that from happening.
Yeah,
but this one does not. So it's not that it looks old, but it's not.
Did you draw that on there?
I did. Play the hell out of it.
Yeah.
What did you draw?
My brother did the same
thing. I just drew like a little
tree.
I don't know what. I started drawing these things a while back. I used to draw a lot of penises. These are sort of phallic.
Sort of.
Less penisy though. Still phallic.
I can see it.
Still phallic. Yeah.
It's lots a wood grain penis.
Lots of penises.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. We used to do that at school all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody draw get penises? Up and go to the bathroom and you draw a great big wiener on their notebook or something.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the best.
Are you aware girls use the word wiener for penis?
I don't like wiener.
No, man, sorry. I was going to say cock and I thought that was too much.
Well, cock is way better.
Cock. We do lots of cock.
Okay, nice.
I can't even tell you how much better that feels. Wiener is just like, oh, no. That's not good.
Okay.
And girls don't like titties, right? They ever have boobs?
I don't care. Boobs,
either one.
Tits.
There's not a good word for tits.
No.
I mean, tits is the best of the worst.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's true.
It's better than boobs. I usually say boobs, but
boobs is kind of like grandma-y.
There's nothing. There's no sexy word because tits
breasts
is not that sexy.
And breasts is like
breasts
that's the worst.
It is very medical.
Ooh, let me look at your breasts.
It's not.
Yeah, we need a new good.
There needs to be
sexy word.
Yeah. I feel like it should start with a W. Like that's a fun
Winnebagoes. Wobbonkers.
Water. Wobbonkers.
Hammers. How about hammers? I've always liked hammers.
No, that sounds
hammers.
You want something soft?
Not hammers. Oh no!
Hey, look at the hammers on her.
Is boobies
actually
too
when
cute?
You say it that way,
boobies?
It's not bad.
Yeah,
boobies. No,
no, okay. That's like wieners.
Yeah, wieners and boobies are out.
I supposed to read this email?
Yeah.
Okay, chick, what the fuck? I can't find it. Okay, seriously. Toward the end of episode 53, you were talking about people emailing you when they're mad they can't find something, so here goes. At the end of that podcast, number 53, you played a song. The only lyrics played were, it's not the end of everything. It's just the end of everything, you know.
Yeah.
It's not the end of everything. I don't know if it was a cover or another song. It's a pop song. But I sure as hell couldn't figure out what it was. With all my Googling, figuring out what the song was, I want to hear the rest of it. But all I can find are Connie Smith and Tommy Edwards.
It's called Bicycle Versus Car.
Bicycle Versus Car.
Yeah.
Head Versus Heart. This is driving me nuts. Anyway, it's never bad to be authentic, honest, and straightforward. I may be a bit skewed from the normal listener. I started listening when you were mentioned on Mark Maron's podcast. I think you have a lot less emotional armor than Mark does. It's very brave of you to let us into your heart. Shut up, lady. I hope you know how much it means to us. Can you play Bicycle Versus Car for
us? I can't.
A
Again,
bit?
It's a piano song.
Oh, that's
it
right.
Is.
That's right.
Dang it.
It's okay.
It's not the end of everything. It's just the end of everything, you know.
Hey, we're pretty good.
It's not the end of everything, it's just the end of everything, you know.
And is that on, that's on Creatures, right?
Head versus heart equals bicycle versus a car. Grassy skies above me, blue black below. Glassy skies above me, yeah. Blue black below. I can't breathe when you're on your knees.
Now what's
when
this about?
When you cough, I'm off to the races. I can't see the forest for the bees. When the jeans in your jeans make off with my enemy.
Something.
Cross the skies above.
I know you can play this. You played it before.
What's
you play
that?
Around and around?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay.
This actually was the story. I met Sandra Bullock back along, when was it, like 99 maybe. She was making a movie in Austin and she started coming to some shows. And she was producing a movie with Liam Neeson called Gunshy.
Mm-hmm.
And she liked this song Round and Round and she wanted me to record it. I just had a really horrible demo of it. And the demo had Pavarotti sing the opera part in
it. Oh, where Harmony Kelly, right? Does
right. Where Harmony sings it live. Right. But there's a little opera part in it. That was Pavarotti. Anyways, so we go into the studio and she actually produced it. She paid the money to go in to record it. And her mom, who's an opera singer, also had a track in the movie. And so we ended up, I was like, I think we can use like a little sample of your mom singing and use that instead of Pavarotti. Cause we're going to have to try to license that and it's going to be a nightmare.
Right.
So we used her mom. It worked out way better than Pavarotti. And then her mom like passed away a few years later. And so it was really cool to have this, like now there's this recording of her mom who's, you know, real lovely lady. But going in to record this song, I met Carl Thiel, and while I was there, I played him some of my songs, and he was like, we should record an album, and that's how I ended up making Lonely Land, was just recording the songs with him, and we just did it on our own, no budget or anything, if we make any money, we'll split it up later or something,
right.
So anyways, this is Round and Round.
Yep.
Falls off your neck, hits the ground with a smack. You're back on the wrong track. Where you at? You lost your head, better get out of bed. That's what I said. You're seeing dead, feeling like the devil. Well, I'm feeling reborn. Where's my porn? My pants been torn back. Put my body in a pine box, paper busting. Clocks changing the locks. Know the time, it's time to get up and get out and get over this. I don't know how and I don't know why. While the world goes round. While the world goes around, while the world goes round and around.
You gotta do the upper part. Perfect.
Harmony Kelly, ladies and gentlemen.
When your bed's been beaten, they turn up the heat. You feel a little weak, you can hardly speak. The coconuts come to your house with a bomb, blow up the cake you got from your mom, and your diapers aren't dry. And you feel a little higher, higher than the big blue sky. And you wring your hands, but the blood pours out, the blood pours out. While the world goes round, while the world goes around, the world goes round and round. When your friends evaporate, and you're tied to the stake, and everything you hate comes crashing down on your big round golden greaser crown. And you're feeling like you're drowning. You're stoned through the dark, and the dogs start to bark, and you're fired on a lark, and your skin starts to spark, and you're burning up inside, and your dentures start to slide. While the world goes round, while the world goes around, while the world goes round and round, while the world goes round, while the world goes around, while the world goes round and round.
All right. Bob Schneider, everybody. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's been
incredible.
Been fun.
And I don't know if we clearly answered that lady's question or not, but the name of the song is Bicycle Versus Car.
It was Robert, actually.
Robert.
And oddly, did you see where he was from?
He was from Austin, Texas.
Oh.
I'm guessing you're going to have a new fan. Not that you need any more in Austin, well, but, you know.
I like new fans.
I don't think you can have too many of them.
Well,
no,
true,
you can't
but
have too many fans.
I like, yeah. I like old fans, too. I like
uh-oh
them both.
You better
I like
them
fans. Okay. Fans in general
fans
are good.
Fans in general.
Thank you, Jess. Thank you, Jason.
Absolutely.
Bob, play us out with the Mudhouse. Go ahead.
Got the milkman walking down the street, white pants and the permanent pleats. Show me the honey, I will show you the money. That's right, wheels for your ass, I got that passport picture. I make the good times come out the good time fountain, up on the good time mountain. Go, hand me the click, I got to change the channel. Damn, you're taking a chance putting that brick in your panel. But I was up in the mud house over in the club, get crunk, bling bling, got love for your ass. I'm moving so fast I can't think, big butts bouncing up on the sink. I wish you was here but I can't be sure. The night's all black and everything's a blur. I got my jacket on, smoking, looking like juice. Got a honey on my table, my shit's all loose. Ain't got no dough, all got's my 40. Hey, hey, take a sip, mama, quit that crazy. Ain't got nobody, baby, I can call my shorty.
Good night,
milk
everybody.
Milk does a body beautiful. Ain't got no dough, all got's my 40. Hey, hey. Ain't got nobody, baby, I can call my shorty.